Welcome to the Ackerman Center podcast.
As a digital extension of the Ackerman Center, our goal is to teach the past so we can change the future.
In doing so, we address issues related to the Holocaust, genocide, and human rights studies from diverse perspectives.
Hello, welcome to the Ackerman Center podcast. I'm Angie Simmons, a research assistant for the Ackerman Center. And today, I'm joined by Dr. Baker, visiting assistant professor for the Ackerman Center and film studies professor. We will be discussing the recently released Netflix original film, Munich, The Edge of War. Thank you for being here, Dr. Baker. Would you mind telling us a little bit about this film and the historical moment it is aiming to depict?
So Munich, The Edge of War is Christian Svojo's 2021 movie. It was released for Netflix on the 21st of January, 2022, and it's an adaptation of Robert Harris's 2017 historical fiction novel, Munich. So it's a fictional story based on real events, and at the center of this movie is the so-called Munich Agreement. So a conference takes place on the 29th and 30th of September, 1938, and it's a conference attended by Germany, Italy, Britain, and France, at which a peace agreement is signed, stating that Hitler won't annex the Czech Sudetenland in exchange for peace. Just 6 years later, Hitler goes back on his promise and invades all of Czechoslovakia. So he takes over, annexes all of Czechoslovakia. And the main kind of narrative proponent of this film involves two men, a civil servant to the British Prime Minister, Hugh Leggett, played by George Mackay, and a German diplomat, Paul von Hartmann, played by Janis Nivona. And the two were former friends. They met at Oxford University in 1932, which is where this film begins. And after an initial falling out due to Paul's kind of Nazi ideologies in the early Third Reich, the two come together to try to derail Hitler's plan to conquer all of Europe and his kind of expansionist ideas, which Neville Chamberlain has no idea of. So the idea is that they present this secret document to Neville Chamberlain with the hopes that he will realise Hitler's true intentions and not sign the agreement. But of course, that doesn't happen. So much of this film is about the what ifs. What if Hitler had been assassinated? What if Neville Chamberlain hadn't signed the agreement? What if, without the political and diplomatic pressure, Czechoslovakia hadn't ceded to the ideals of this peace agreement?
As you said, this film is a fictional story that's based on real events. In particular, the main characters are the fictional element. The film opens up with a glimpse at their time in Oxford in the 1930s and sets the context for their complicated relationship moving forward. Does this bit of the story have any relevance to the bigger themes of the movie?
I'm still not totally sure, to be honest. The setting and the meeting of these two friends in Oxford in the 1930s is kind of a narrative device. It serves to show us the connection between these German and British, well, what come to be kind of spies who are involved in espionage. It also gives us an insight into the political moment, but also into their own generation's kind of understandings of what's going on the edge of war. So we see that in that opening sequence in Oxford, the two men, Paul and Hugh, are graduating, and Paul's girlfriend, Lena, is there as well. And they call themselves this mad generation, which we can imagine, looking back retroactively, they have yet to understand how mad that generation will turn out to be. But it kind of gives us a sense for what their lives could have been had war not played out and had their attempts to stop Hitler from conquering Europe actually played out. I just wanted to talk about the Oxford University thing, because I think this is obviously a narrative framing device, but I think that it's important to note that this is something that has been critiqued by film critics who take issue with this very Oxbridge portrayal of politics. We get a narrow perspective on politics at this period, kind of a centrist perspective, even though Paul ends up being militantly anti-Nazi. It's said time and again by Hugh that, you know, we must stop war from happening because people will suffer, you know, this very kind of broad idea. And perhaps some critics have also been skeptical of the kind of message this is trying to give in our current political moment.
I think it's interesting that you bring up the plead about people who are going to suffer, because a big part of the consequence of Hitler rising to power, and even just this very pivotal moment where where they could have stopped Hitler by not allowing him to annex the Sudetenland, they could have pushed against appeasement, and then we would have ended up with probably a very different course of events that would follow. But this, because of what takes place, because of what happens, obviously people are going to suffer. And we don't really see a lot of that in this film. But we do get glimpses of it, particularly through one character. And she only makes a few brief appearances. It's Paul's girlfriend, Lena. Even though she's not in it very often, her character does contribute a very critical aspect of what is at stake if Hugh and Paul fail to stop Hitler. How do you think this film handles the treatment of Jewish people at this time? Would you say that it does or does not play a significant role?
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. Lena's character is really interesting because she plays devil's advocate to Paul's initial fanaticism, I suppose, for the so-called New Germany. And she emerges as the kind of voice of reason. But then her fate, as we learn at the end of the film, she is Jewish and is incarcerated in a concentration camp. Her fate is only given a couple of minutes of screen time, which is really unfortunate. But that is to say that I think that the Holocaust and the persecution of Jews in the Third Reich is definitely peripheral to this movie. I don't think that it's the film's intention to do a deep dive into Jewish persecution, the years of persecution, as the historian Saul Friedlander puts it. But nevertheless, it seems that perhaps the film could have done more in terms of a representation of Jewish murder and persecution at the time. Nevertheless, we do get these fleeting moments, as you say, of representation. First of all, we see early on in the film that there are a group of Jews in Berlin who are forced to scrub pavements, and there behind them we see German civilians and SS men humiliating them, laughing at them. So we see some of that. Also, as I just mentioned, see Lena and her fate. She is said to have fallen from a concentration camp. So she's incarcerated for being a political opponent, I believe. But then it's discovered that she is Jewish in the women's camp. It doesn't say which camp, I don't think. Doesn't specify that. And then we're told by Paul, so her former boyfriend, that she had a Star of David carved into her back. So really grotesque. Either falls or is thrown out of a window. So we see her at the end of the film, and she's kind of a shell of her former self. She can't speak. She's barely moving. She's all but not with us. And it's a shame that that wasn't drawn upon more, because I think her character was really dynamic. There's one other image, I think, that to me anyway kind of invoked Jewish prisoners in concentration camps, although I'm not sure that that was actually the intention. There's this moment where Hugh comes home from work early on in the film to his wife Pamela and his son Arthur, and he sees his son Arthur at the top of the stairs wearing a gas mask, and he freaks out. He doesn't expect him to be there, but the boy is also wearing these blue and white striped pajamas, and I don't know if it was intentional or not, but it reminded me firstly of the boy in striped pajamas of the Holocaust film. But it seemed like surely those responsible for this costuming would have seen that parallel. So there are glimpses of Jewish persecution, and there are references. Lena references anti-Semitism a couple of times. But as I said, I think other than that, the fate of Jews is either generalized or kind of left to the periphery, to the sidelines of the movie.
One could argue that it's not necessary to devote so much time to create an impact or to create the kind of message that there obviously is going to be this Jewish persecution. There's going to, you know, they're foreshadowing the Holocaust. But I think the moments that they chose to portray were impactful. They did offer enough of an insight into what was going to happen for us, the viewer, who obviously do know what's going to happen, to pick up on those moments. for us as the viewers, obviously we're in a privileged position of knowing what's going to happen in history. We know what's coming. Mm-hmm. But of course, the characters can't possibly know at this point. So there's a pivotal moment in the movie that comes during a flashback where Hugh is visiting Paul in Germany, and Paul and Lena in Germany. And the two men get into this heated debate about the current political landscape. They reference the idea that the two of them have debated before, but this time is different. So why is this time different? And why is it so significant to the story? What does it say about the Nazi ideology of the time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. It's another really interesting question. I think we see throughout this film that the kind of relationship that Paul and Hugh have very early on is one of kind of political provocation. I think we see from the outset that they have slightly different political ideologies, but that really comes into play here. And as you said, so they're at this bar and we see that Paul is getting increasingly aggressive in response to Hugh and Hugh's kind of denigrations of this so-called New Germany and all it stands for. And Lena as well talks of Hitler and his supporters as thugs, as racists. She is very overt and explicit in her condemnation of those responsible, those at the head of this New Germany.
Hitler has this, he gets people to support him because he has this message about empowering Germany and making Germany great again. And after suffering the trauma that was suffered by the German people following World War I and all the damage that was done to Germany, to the population, to their psyche, this is, you know, a message that people really are mm-hmm. passionate about and they cling to mm-hmm. because it's giving them the opportunity to rise from the ashes.
During this argument, which gets increasingly heated, Paul looks to another man sitting next to him on a table and says, "Why are you voting for Hitler? Who are you voting for?" And he says, "Hitler." And he says, "Why are you voting for Hitler?" And this man says, "Hitler makes us proud to be German again." So that, I think, encompasses what you've just said. And what is, I think, really interesting, there's some really interesting dialogue in this scene, is that Paul says that voting for Hitler is not voting against Jews, it's voting for the future. So you can see how, whether consciously or not, there's this separation of the racism, the anti-Semitism, the xenophobia that we now know and that Paul should have known that Hitler stands for, and this idea of, I don't know, German exceptionalism and as you said, making Germany great again, which obviously speaks to our current moment.
You've made a pretty strong point about the film being mostly about the diplomatic efforts. The scenes that we get where we're seeing, you know, the gas masks, we're seeing the preparation, we're seeing the scrambling and kind of like a sense of panic, really, because people are feeling that the war is imminent. But I think that really serves to contrast the diplomatic moments that are happening and to show, you know, what's at stake. If the diplomacy fails, then it's inevitably going to be a war. And, you know, World War II was, I think, specifically traumatic because they'd just come out of World War I, and World War I had been the worst war that anyone had ever seen. You know, it was the first industrialized war. It was devastating. It lasted for a very long time. All the etiquette of war of the previous centuries was completely thrown out the window, and it was bloody. It was deadly. So people don't want to go into this again. There's a lot at stake here. And that's what those brief glimpses that we get of people in the background, you know, kind of scrambling and the gas mask and Hugh being freaked out by the gas mask, all that, I think, is just serving to highlight the importance of the diplomacy that has to take place here and just raising the stakes on what Hugh and Paul have to accomplish in order to prevent all of this from happening.
Yeah, for sure. That juxtaposition between diplomatic and civilian life definitely keeps us as audience members. It serves as a reminder, as you said, of what's at stake, of the lives lost.
It would seem that World War II and Holocaust-themed movies are having a moment right now, but one always has to approach them with caution in regard to relying on them as historical fact, which people tend to do. What are your thoughts on the place of this film within the Holocaust genre?
I'm not sure that I would place this particular movie within a so-called Holocaust genre, because as we've said, the Holocaust is very much peripheral to this film. The whole time we've been talking, I've been thinking about this, and you know, the Nuremberg laws come in 1933, so we have so many years of Jewish persecution that have happened already by the time we turn to Germany in 1938, and the more I think about it, the more I think we see much too little of that, even though, as we've said, this is not a quote-unquote Holocaust film and doesn't position itself as such. So that's my first response. I'm not sure if I would place it in within that kind of genre. But I definitely think that films about the Holocaust specifically, but also genocide more broadly, are having a moment. More and more people are tuning into films to get their history, to access their history. And that's when this issue of fictionalization, if indeed it is an issue, really comes into play. Because Angie, I think you spoke the other day about the responsibility of a filmmaker for putting work out there, dealing with such huge themes of loss, of genocide. We can question whether a director is morally responsible for the content, the material that they're putting out there. But more so than that, I think this moment that the Holocaust film or genocide film is having raises important questions about the historical record, especially with the Holocaust, as the Holocaust passes out of living memory and into history. The question of how we remember the Holocaust and how we represent the Holocaust, which impacts hugely on public consciousness of the event, become really urgent. We have to be vigilant as consumers of history that is channeled through popular culture. We can't accept what we see as fact. Perhaps that's where this movie falls down, in that we're never explicitly told that both Paul and Hugh are fictional characters, that their characters never existed. And this is especially surprising, since there was actually a plot to assassinate Hitler in 1938, led by Hans Oster, so the Oster conspiracy. So it would have been very useful for audiences to have received that information up front, perhaps with an intertitle explaining that this is partly based on history, but that it's a fictional representation of that history. And we can speculate about what gets lost when audience don't receive that information, because you can imagine that if this is the only time at which a particular spectator has ever heard about this history, it might be the last time they hear about the history, then they might come away with this fictional impression of what actually happened.
Film can be an important access point for those who are outside the realm of historical studies to learn about historical moments, of course, with the caveat that it should not be their sole source of information. If it does nothing else to pique people's interest in a particular historical event and hopefully encourage them to go and research those things on their own. I mean, we have all this information at our fingertips. All we have to do is Google it. If nothing else, films such as these should hopefully serve the purpose as being an access point to these big historical events and encouraging people to go and research them for themselves, where they otherwise probably wouldn't have known about it and wouldn't have been interested enough to go and search for it themselves. Munich, The Edge of War is available to stream on Netflix. Thank you, Dr. Baker, for your fascinating insights on this film.
Thanks very much for having me. This is a great conversation. Thanks, Angie.
And thank you again for listening. We'll see you again next time.
Bye.
This podcast is hosted by a team of dedicated faculty and research assistants at the Ackerman Center for Holocaust Studies.
You can learn more about our work and find upcoming events at our website, www.ackerman.utdallas.edu.